You're listening to Privacy and Security Insights, brought to you by Picasso.
Hello and welcome to Picasso podcast series. I'm Steve Wright, the host for this morning. I'm delighted to be joined here by Jose Quesada. How did I do, Jose? Wonderful. Okay, well, listen, I am so excited about this subject. We have been talking a lot about AI. It's all over the news. It's pretty much everywhere in every part of life. I just can't believe how much is out there. And you've done a fantastic article, which you can click on the link and download that article. It's really good. I recommend it. But today we're just going to introduce it by asking Jose a few questions. It's called The Privacy Paradox in AI-Driven Enterprises, Balancing Innovation with Data Protection, a subject that is dear to all of our hearts and to all of our listeners. So without further ado, I'm going to ask the first question, Jose. Could you start by just explaining the concept of how privacy paradox can impact an AI-driven enterprise?
Yeah, for sure. So look, there are two competing goals. On the one hand, there's this new wave of artificial intelligence that unlocks use cases that were not possible just 2 years ago. On the other hand, of course, this also means that you're working with amounts of data and complexities in the setups and the pipelines that you haven't had to contend with before. I know we've all been hearing about AI for years, so it feels like it's all the same. But these new models, it allows us to make sense of data sources that in the past it would have been extremely hard to ingest and to make sense of. We're talking complicated PDFs, we're talking Excel files. So there is the two competing goals here. On the one hand, can I build this all-powerful, almost quasi-god that answers any question that I have based on its our own internal knowledge as a company, but also everything that it knows about the world? And, you know, bear in mind, these models have been trained on the entirety of human knowledge as seen on the internet. But on the other hand, this also means that we have to have slightly more sophisticated data architectures, layers of privacy. We have to think of privacy now at the point of model training, model fine-tuning. We can talk about that later. Integrating our own data into this model, whether it's in fine-tuning or what's called RAG systems, we'll talk about it again. And yeah, governance looks a little bit different, outcomes look a little bit different, risks look a little bit different.
Lovely. Thank you. Thank you for just opening up. And you can see, Jose here is an expert. I've been to many of his lectures and many of his presentations, and there isn't anything this man doesn't know. So I'm really excited. So why then, Jose, is data such a critical resource in these AI systems? You kind of alluded to it then, but, you know, this is the big challenge that we've got as data protection officers. How do we balance innovation? We don't want to stop the business. We want to do this, but how are we going to protect the privacy of those individuals?
Yeah, so let's think about this at the two key moments of consumption, really. One is training a model, and the other one is using a model. So training a model, most companies are not going to have to do unless you're a massive enterprise. You know, there's a famous use case of Bloomberg trying to train a model on their financial data, and ultimately it's performing worse than sort of plain vanilla GPT-4 trained by OpenAI, right? It's really tough to do this properly, although things have changed a lot. There are new open source models you can train upon. So, but there are two different considerations. On the one hand, when you train a model, you're ultimately embedding your knowledge and your data sources into this model for eternity, right? And this model doesn't learn by just simply plugging a database that it draws from, but rather it learns the concepts of the information you're feeding into it. If it doesn't know specifically what a Picasso is, but it's seen enough examples of Picasso, it can describe what a Picasso is, it will know enough about its life. So if you embed data into this model, it will be very hard to extirpate it afterwards. Sometimes you're doing this willingly because you want to train your own model. Sometimes you're doing this unwillingly if your data is exposed to the world and you didn't get the labs not to train your data on it. This is why it's very important as you work with model providers to make sure that you've read the data processing addendum, to make sure that you have a setup, an enterprise setup, or for example, that your questions that you ask a model, the answers that you get, the data that you upload are never going to be able to be used to train the model. And then much more briefly, because I think we'll talk about this more in the next questions, on the usage of that model, say that a model has already been created and I just have to interact with this AI. There are different architectural choices you can make, a few different good practices that you can, such that you minimize data exposure to the model while still benefiting from the capability of this new technology to now tap into data sources that you've never been able to plug into models before and get your answers.
I liked the point that you mentioned there about being hard to extradite. You know, once it's gone in and been consumed, it's difficult to basically get it out. We're big on privacy by design. So it's an important principle for us to make sure that we've understood what the risks are and then how can we practically apply this. So what's your thoughts on privacy by design in this context?
Yeah, privacy by design means treating privacy as a first-class citizen from the beginning rather than as an afterthought, right?
Yeah.
I'm very close to this problem because, so just to mention for the listeners, I'm the CEO of a company, a tech company that offers AI primarily to funds, primarily private equity. So we knew from the beginning that, in our case, privacy compliance were very much core considerations. So at the point of training a model, there are things that you're going to have to consider, like, for example, anonymizing, tokenizing the data in a way where personally identifiable information is never going to be able to not only be extracted plain vanilla, but also even inferred from putting enough data points together, right? Those models are very powerful at making connection across different data points. And so you need to make sure that when you prepare that data, you spend a disproportionate amount of time making sure that that data is privacy prepared, because it's going to be very hard to the data afterwards. It's not like a traditional database where you can just eliminate a row and then that information is not there anymore. There are new ways to train a model, like federated learning, where, for example, instead of training a model all in one cluster, the data is distributed across different clusters, which you also do for efficiency, but it also minimizes the amount of data that any one cluster gets access to. But for our listeners, I think they would care first and foremost about preserving privacy at the moment of using the models. So this means if you have a system that already has permissions assigned to different roles, like, for example, this person should have access to this folder, to that file, plugging all that data into the model should not suddenly just get rid of all those privacy layers, right? We should be thinking about how do we inherit the permissions such that when you ask a question, only the right files get exposed to the right people. It also means making sure that the provider of your AI logs only what is absolutely crucial in order to debug this system. You don't want them to be seeing the questions you ask the system. It's this sort of considerations that means they need to be built from the beginning, because it's very, very hard to introduce them afterwards when the time comes for the compliance review to light.
Yep. That's interesting. I suppose that leads us nicely onto the next question, which is, you did talk about different privacy-preserving AI systems, federated learning. You also mentioned in your article about RAG concept. Tell us a little bit about that, and then kind of just what are the trade-offs? How can organizations navigate these trade-offs? So a little bit on different learning types or different models.
Yeah, I'm going to spend a little bit more time on this question. I think this is the key one that would be most useful for most people. What techniques can we use? What are the different avenues available to us to make sure that we plug our data in a way that is secure into the model? I'm going to talk now only from the usage perspective of the model rather than the training, because again, this is sort of relevant to more people. So look, first and foremost, you can train your own model. Training your own model means that you get complete ownership and decision power on what you expose to this model. Now, this is really tough, because while you would argue, for example, I'm only going to train the model on the absolute bare minimum that it needs to be trained on in order to be able to answer questions, there are trade-offs. We don't realize that as humans, we learn by making tons of associations across different concepts. And if we only ever got exposed to, say, a textbook, we wouldn't learn the same way as if we sort of walked around the world and we understood what the concept of, say, a city hall is, because we've seen a city hall in actual person as a building, right? Meta learns when they were training their own open source models called Llama, when they first tried not to expose these models to coding data, essentially repositories of code, because they said, look, this is not meant to be a coding model. It's just not what it's meant to do. It's meant to be like this conversational model. Yeah. They found it actually performed worse than when you actually expose the model to code during training. Reason for this is code is a very structured type of data. You know, this is you have to define my inputs, outputs, expected logic. So the model learned logic and reasoning through just simply being exposed to code. So it's very hard to be very selective about the type of sources that you feed. However, once a model has good general reasoning knowledge, for example, because it has already been trained by an organization larger than our enterprise or one of the specialist organizations, say they're using Llama, what you can do is you can fine-tune a model. Fine-tuning a model means presenting enough examples of your data to a model that it starts learning, for example, about the meaning of a certain word that acquires a different meaning in the context of your organization. Picasso, for example, to stick to this example, right?
Yes,
while it may have heard of the organization Picasso as opposed to the painter Picasso, by exposing enough examples of your organization called Picasso, documents labeled with Picasso, you're going to shift the weights more towards Picasso as an organization. So fine-tuning is very important, for example, when you have a system that needs to, where you ask a question, and it presents you with an answer, it's going to present you with more relevant answers if you've presented it with enough examples of your internal documentation. The last thing I'm going to talk about, and forgive me for being a bit longer in this question, but I promise that it's probably more right.
No, this is brilliant.
So it's RAG system, retrieval augmented generation. The explanation is in the name. Retrieval augmented generation means you're generating an answer, but this answer is augmented with information that has been retrieved on the spot.
Okay. Yeah.
Meaning you have a model that has already been trained, perhaps it's even been fine-tuned with your data, and now what you're doing is you're presenting with information on the spot. This information is the equivalent of what you could think of short-term memory. Feeding this information to the model will not affect its knowledge, the knowledge of your model, unless your provider has explicitly said they're going to train on your data as well. It means that it's not going to affect the long-term memory of this model. But it does mean that you can now plug all of your information in a more secure way. Why? Because you can keep your information in repositories of data, for example, a vector database. Vector is just the format that these models can work with. A vector database in your own cloud environments that can be completely private. And that it means if this model is already secure meaning because you run it in your infrastructure or you run it in a provider that you trust because of data policy that and the processing addendum says that they're not going to train on your data. So that part is secure. Then you're also keeping that crucial enterprise critical information in a secure repository. So the model can only retrieve that information on the spot when it needs it and then forgets about it. This is really powerful because it means that you can keep adding more and more data to that repository as it comes. It's not that you have to do a training run. The model learns about your data. But then what if you have new data? It's not going to know about the data again until you train it again. No, that data is ever fresh because it's there in your systems. And it also means that you can have slightly more sophisticated setups on things like we said earlier, role-based access control, for example, where you say, okay, well, now I have these different folders. The model can tap these folders, but those folders are discriminated by permission. So not everyone has access to everything.
Brilliant. I hope the listeners who are on the way to work or whatever situation have actually been scribbling like I have. Nuggets of information.
If you're driving, please.
If you're driving, please pull over. Don't try and scribble this down. We are flying through the time here, which is not at all surprising. How do modern AI systems ensure that user control over the data? And what do you believe is the challenges that come with implementing a dynamic consent mechanism as one of those controls?
Yeah, so you want to have ongoing governance that is going to obviously constantly going to look at whether the setup is constantly optimal. It's a toughie because on the one hand, you want strong governance, but you also want people to give people sort of the freedom to experiment, particularly as we're trying to figure out what is the best way to use this model for our own internal use cases. So it tends to be that the best way to do this is you have almost like a star that understands generative AI enough to understand the different trade-offs and privacy implications of the different setups. You have secure repositories of data, for example, like we said, a secure RAG system. That means by design to begin with, our data is secure and access control is already adhered. Once that is locked in and secure, you can start making a lot more nuanced decisions on the different use cases you want to enable. You can have tiers for the sensitivity of the data. So it may be that proper solutions that go into production and, you know, a lot of people are going to have access to are the highest sensitivity, where you want to make sure that not only the architecture is secure, not only your providers are people you trust, that all the different technology components are, for example, certified with SOC 2, Type 2, 1, DORA compliant. Mm-hmm. But in fact, that there's constant tests, for example, say a bank of questions that you're asking all the time, or like the answers you're getting seem to be sort of what you expect it to be, that there isn't any leakage of data, that there's no bias in the answers. However, you can also set up slightly less secure environments where you have a repository of less sensitive documents, or perhaps older documents, documents that have been anonymized, documents that might come from external sources that are publicly available. And these are the kind of repositories that you want to give people more access, more freedom to experiment with, right? To try the different use cases. You might also consider hybrid architectures where part of your solution is in your own setup, in your own cloud, while other things that are centralized, in our case, we have a fairly sophisticated pipeline. And it's really, if I'm honest, unrealistic for any one client to keep a version of this pipeline on-premise. We make changes to this pipeline all the time. So while that part of the infrastructure is in our systems, the actual data sources that it taps are segregated per client. A lot of it lives in our infrastructure. So, for example, a vector database, which is the numerical representation of your data, instead of being words, gets transformed into little comma-separated numbers, which is what models can work with. That lives in our architecture. It's encrypted. But then the actual sources and the underlying files that are being fed into your system, they live in your architecture. So, you know, this is why hybrid setups are very advisable. And there's a couple of other things, but I think we've probably had a lot of time.
We could talk about the different homomorphic encryption and zero knowledge proofs and all these kind of good things, but we are desperately running out of time as usual. So do you think organizations are more focused on meeting those regulatory requirements than truly embedding ethical considerations into their AI systems? And could this balance, if that is the case, how do we balance this, or can we improve this situation?
Yeah, so I think there are, so first of all, immediate considerations, like, for example, no one wants to be fined and face legal action because you exposed the wrong data to the wrong model. This is why this is something that needs to be considered from the beginning. And it's almost independent of using generative AI or the new types of AI in your data, right? This is things that you should be doing out of like pure sheer just good data governance. But then there are slightly more nuanced things that we all have to take into account, like, for example, bias, fairness, accountability. These are ongoing efforts. There's no black or white answer. The moment that you tweak a system, you might have to reconsider, for example, things like bias. Mm-hmm. I've introduced many examples in the past. For example, I don't know if you're plugging HR data into this, as you're now querying the model about the average salary for certain bands or for certain roles, right? Because you plugged all your HR data, now you're asking questions of it. Are we making sure that we're not extrapolating past bias in the data into future decisions? So there's constant monitoring and things that we have to, there's no black or white answer, you just have to constantly monitor for this. So yeah, we have to go beyond like ethic committees and sort of static setups, like which just decide on a one-off basis, towards more ongoing governance for people who are deeply familiar with both the systems, but also the data sources underlying the systems.
Thank you. So final question. Looking ahead, what do you see as the most pressing privacy challenges for AI, if you could summarize that, and kind of two top tips from Jose on what organizations can do to prepare for them?
These models are being trained on larger amounts of data, right? So you have to make sure that your data, particularly sensitive data, it's obviously not exposed. This is just a no-brainer, but also data that you've been wanting in these models to begin with. There's a lot of, it's a very contentious issue that's beyond the scope of this podcast about how do we protect copyright that otherwise is used to, or copyrighted material that goes to train this model. Look, the first black and white answer is just make sure that data is not exposed or available if you don't want it to be in a model to begin with. These large companies have constantly crawling systems that are constantly trying to absorb all of the data that you put out there in the world. Yeah. But I think perhaps one of the biggest risks is a lot more pedestrian, and that is just lack of familiarity with the technology. Because we use AI as this umbrella term, it seems that people think, oh, well, if I'm not an AI, I don't have to worry about this. But incumbents like Google have this tendency of making the new thing a feature. So AI is going to be more and more embedded into products that we use day to day. That means that you probably want to have a culture of being privacy-centric, not just as an abstract, but have people use these tools and understand what the different setups mean for privacy concerns. Make sure that if they're using a model vanilla on the spot in some OpenAI's website, that they understand what the privacy implications are of that. If they upload a file, that they also understand what files are able to upload or not. because this is coming for everyone. Like what I tell people when I do workshops and things like that is, first and foremost, if you haven't used it, we're going to use it right now here in this workshop, just to demystify what these models can do. Because I think one of the biggest risks is people, as the technology becomes more and more sophisticated, they almost build this, they almost think that it doesn't concern them, right? This is a sophisticated thing that is advancing, and you don't understand that the way that you use your products today already have an implication for what data gets exposed, and yeah, and perhaps even, you know, what our jobs are going to look like in the future.
Jose, I think you've done a marvelous job to try and squeeze that into this podcast, which was quite packed. On behalf of Picasso, I want to thank you. As Jose introduced himself,
the CEO of Crew.Build.
Fantastic. So he is a lawyer, an economist, as you can tell from this podcast, an absolute font of knowledge. So if there's anyone that I want to go to, it's Jose when it comes to AI, and I will certainly be leaning on him when we have to write our internal AI guidelines. I'm Steve Wright. Thank you for joining us today. Have a great day. Bye for now. Thank you, Jose.
Thank you, Steve.